Hi, and welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and today on The Stacks, we're talking to actor Josh Segarra, who has been on Broadway and on a whole bunch of TV shows, including Arrow, Orange is the New Black, and he's on a new Comedy Central show that comes out this Thursday called The Other Two. You can catch the first episode on January 24th. Before we get going, here's your reminder to follow The Stacks on all of our social media platforms for reviews, lists, and more bookish content. Links to all of our accounts can be found in the show notes. Also in the show notes are links to everything we talk about on today's episode. Shopping through these links gives The Stacks a small commission at no cost to you. If you're shopping anyway, why not help out this bookish podcast? As you know, The Stacks is a completely free show. Every episode is available for free. If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/thestacks. You make contributions to this show, you get to know you're supporting a podcast you love, and you get perks like our virtual book club and a lot more. Go to patreon.com/thestacks to join the Stacks Pack. And while we're here, I just want to give a special thank you to our newest members of the Stacks Pack: Lisa Sneed, Emily Willis, Chelsea Gardner, Kate Olson, and Olivia Coco. Thank you all so much for your support and making this show a reality. If a monthly subscription isn't for you, you can also do one-time contributions by going to paypal.me/thestackspod. If you've set goals around reading more nonfiction in 2019, check out our sponsor, My Mentor Book Club. They're a monthly subscription box of two newly released nonfiction books. They come to your door every month. Shipping is free and you can cancel at any time. Listeners of The Stacks get 50% off their first box by going to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. Audible's our other sponsor. They have all the audiobooks you could want. Plus, folks new to Audible get a free 30-day trial and free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thestacks. So go check it out. Take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this show. It goes a long way to helping us reach new audiences and in turn be able to book more new, exciting, inspiring, diverse guests. So if you haven't yet, take a moment to rate and review the show. Our latest review comes from Alej Gutz, and they say, "This is a great podcast. Tracy asks almost the questions of her interesting and insightful guests that I want asked. That she brings her own self to the conversation makes the flow and exchange all the better. I am catching up listening to older episodes, but The Stacks is one of my go-to book resources now. Keep up the good work. Hard to believe it's only about 9 months old. With time, it will only get better and better." Thank you so much, Alej Gutz. Okay, now it's time for our discussion with actor Josh Segarra. All right, y'all, we are back this week with our guest, my dear friend, Josh Segarra. Josh is an actor of both the screen and the stage. You can find him on the television shows Arrow, Sirens, and Orange is the New Black. He's been on Broadway in the On Your Feet musical, and he's got a bunch of exciting new projects coming up soon, which I'll let him tell you about. Hi, Josh. Welcome to The Stacks.
Hi, Trace. I'm excited, man.
I'm so excited that you're here. Josh is one of my oldest, dearest friends from college, so we're going to try to keep it semi-professional, but he's like actually a real actor too, so it's fine. Okay, I'm going to let you tell us about yourself first.
Okay. One, I love you for that intro. That was very cool. That was very, very
fun. Do you feel famous?
It's funny because we've sat at this table so many times, and I just love you, dude. Yeah. This has been incredible. I'm going to say how I know you. I met you like day one of college, day two mm-hmm. of college, something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And we've just been buds ever since, man. I don't think I would have graduated without you.
That's right.
You took every note.
I read all the books and I took every note, and this should surprise no people.
No people.
Zero people.
You were my friend that tells me to read today. Yep, you know,
that's right.
If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be reading.
That's also true.
No, dude, I'm out here in LA for a little bit working on a show called AJ and the Queen. It's going to come out on Netflix. It's going to be very, very fun. That's been cool.
And who else is in that show?
RuPaul. You might know that, man.
Just casual.
Yeah, just a little RuPaul.
Like, you know? I don't want to fangirl too much, but I just want to know because he's one of the producers on the show.
Yeah.
And he created the show?
He and Michael Patrick King. So Michael Patrick King is our showrunner. Michael Patrick King was the showrunner for Sex and the City and Two Broke Girls and The Comeback. And so Michael and Rue are telling the story. Okay. So Rue's the star. You know, Rue is, he's the queen and AJ and the queen. And then you'll meet a little girl named Izzy G who plays AJ. And they, by happenstance, end up on the road together. On the show, I play Hector. I play Rue's boyfriend, Hector.
Okay.
And his business partner.
Okay, amazing. And is Rue as dynamic and captivating in like day-to-day life, like eating breakfast at craft services?
100%.
Does he eat breakfast at craft services?
I have yet to see him eat breakfast at craft services. We talk about what we eat all the time. That's one of our favorite conversations. But Rue is, you use the word captivating. He is, man. He's just, he's an unbelievable, such a beautiful energy, you know, like just the way he conducts himself in front of, you know, all these powerful people. You know, we'll sit at read-throughs and it's all the Netflix cats and it's all the Warner Brothers cats. And he just sits there, man, just makes everybody laugh, puts everybody at ease, you know, and he's been my bud, you know, and from day one, we've just been buddies and just getting to know each other a little bit more and more. And he truly is incredible. And it's fun. Like I get to meet him in the middle, you know, like he's a legend for everything that he's doing. He's waking up every day at 4 a.m. that guy, and he's got the world's best coming out, and of course he's got Drag Race, and he's got his world, and then we get to come together and get to tell our little story that I know he's really proud of, and I'm really proud of, so I'm excited for everybody to see it.
And when does it come out?
This fall. I don't know an exact date, but something in the fall.
And it's on Netflix.
It's going to be
on
Netflix.
So it'll all be out at once.
It'll all be out at once.
So we can binge and like die.
Binge. It's freaky. It's freaky, man. Like even on, because on Orange.
Because you're on the most recent season of Orange.
Yeah, on 6 and 7. And I think they just announced that it's going to be the last season.
7? So,
yeah.
But it hasn't been filmed yet.
They're filming it right now. Oh, okay. They're about to finish it up. Yeah. So, so my character on there, you know, like Stefanovich is a funny little cat. But I kind of come in, paint a couple colors, and then, you know, I get to leave the palette there. Whereas this, we're telling one story. This, you know, obviously it's coming out at the same time. It's going to be streaming. So I haven't gotten to craft an arc like this that's going to be seen on maybe in a day. So that's freaky. And it's exciting, and there's pressure in that. But it's all I'm thinking about. So I'm hoping that it, you know, it ends up being a nice little package at the end.
I can't wait to watch it. I'm very excited. No, not because you're in it, because I just really like RuPaul.
Yeah, I know you do.
Okay. So you've also been on Broadway.
Yeah.
Which is like the coolest thing in the world. I think like being on TV is lovely, and like being a movie star, like winning an Oscar is fine. But being on Broadway is, to me, the tippy top.
Yeah, it's the coolest.
And you played Emilio Estevan in the Gloria Estevan musical. And you got to do a lot of pivot turns, which I loved.
Which
was really important. But here's the thing. How often, if ever, are actors or you playing people who are alive who you know for sure will see your work? Because he was a producer on it.
Yeah.
So like you were playing him and it wasn't like, oh, maybe he'll come and that would be funny. It's like, oh, he's at rehearsal today.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I'm you.
Oh, yeah. You know, like it was maybe a... At first, I remember, because it was about a 2-year process from the very first reading to my last show, and they kept going for another year after I had left. And now they're still on tour. They're killing it.
Right.
So it was definitely intimidating at first. I remember meeting him, and I heard his accent. You know, he said, hey, mucho gusto. Hey, good to meet you, Judge. You know, and I, at that moment, I think the intimidation wore off because I realized how warm he was. He's the best, man. You know, I've been fortunate enough to come across some cool cats, and he is definitely one of the coolest. I joked. I was like, yo, you know Pitbull, right? And he's like, yeah, that's my boy. I was like, that's Mr. Worldwide. He's like, no, baby. I'm Mr. Worldwide. And I was like, okay.
My highlight with them was I went and saw you, and I got to go backstage, which is like I love to do because obviously I'm a loser who loves musical theater. And I get back there, and I like, you know, they're like, Josh, your guest is here. And I go upstairs to like see it's like this really – it was at the Marquee at the Marriott, so it's like a really nice backstage. It's like fancy and not like – 30 stories high. And Gloria and Emilio are walking down the hall. And I'm like, oh my God, there they are. Like trying to be like, oh, I don't see them, whatever. And they come right up to us and they're like, oh, Tracy, we've heard so much about you. And I was like, I'm dead. But like only really nice people would do that.
Correct.
Because first of all, they probably heard zero things about me. But second of all,
they did hear.
Maybe like one thing. But second of all, for them to act like to make me feel like I was important, that's like a level of just grace and goodness, because it would be so easy to be like, oh, you're Josh's friend, hi, and walk away. But they're like, we've heard so much about you. And like, I think that she gave me a hug, but I also think I blacked out because I also saw Andrea Burns, who I also love from Songs from a New World, which
this
again
is my girl.
This is all embarrassing for me to say, but also all very true.
No, man, that's a you like that was them, you yeah. know, like that's them at all times, you know. They were just such a, they were incredible, man. Yeah. I wouldn't trade that experience for anything, just getting to see them and just kind of get to know them. And it's, you know, what you asked about playing Emilio, it's funny, years removed now, I'm thinking back to it. I realized, like, at first, I heard Josh Brolin talk about something one day where he was talking about what he uses as kind of hooks. Mm-hmm. He likes to find his hooks for each character. Mm-hmm. And with Emilio, looking back, that hook was the accent.
Right.
You know, that's my family speaks with an accent. You know, he reminded me of my uncle, of my dad, of my cousins, you know, and that accent was everything, you know, and his energy was everything. And that's what we did with that show, you know,
yeah.
like that show was an unbelievable experience, man.
And that was so fun. And if it's coming to a city near you, you should go see it. It's all the music that you know. Like, yeah. it's like the whole show. You're just
You'll
like,
be like catapulted back to Miami
dancing.
In the 80s. Yeah, 100%.
I'm one of those people who fully does not stand up during a musical. And I do believe I was standing up going to conga. I was like, oh, I think like all these people around me were standing up. And I was like, I do love this song. This is my jam. Tell no one. okay. So in addition to being on Broadway and being a star on Broadway and being in TV, you get to do like a lot of cool, glamorous things. But I want to know what stuff people think is glamorous that is actually the pits about being like an actor with some, you know, fame. Because like you've been like a bad guy on a comic book show. Like,
yeah.
And people really care about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's a very cool world involved in that.
So, like, what's the thing where you're like, oh, my God, everyone's like, oh, and you're really like, this is my nightmare. I hate doing this.
I'll tell you right now what I'm going through with this character.
Hector.
With Hector, he's obsessive about his body.
Mm.
And as you know, Trace, I am not obsessive
about
my body.
You're obsessive about food. That's correct.
I'm obsessive about food. So... the hook for this guy has been that. It was the first thing that I was told about the character was like, this guy cares more than anything. And you know, my wife, who you know very well, my wife has been a huge support throughout this, but there's been a couple nights of tears when I wanted to eat the food I wanted to eat and it's usually just me being a baby. All this comes down to is, you know, like if there's a challenge set in front of you, you want to just run right through the wall. Mm-hmm. And then I personally will come up with 50 excuses as to why I can't run through that wall. I will say, no, I need ice cream to fall asleep. No, I eat my feelings. That's how I cope. Food is my vice. And then you get a character that those things don't make sense. And you got to start on the inside out and you find that hook. And now we're 6 months in and sure, there have been some days where it was the pits, but the other days are ones where you're like, all right, man, I'm accomplishing something that I know was nearly impossible.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's been a fun journey. You know, each character has that thing. So with this one, it's been that. It's been, I know it's a positive thing. I know that it's for the character, but man, there have been some tough days.
Right. Well, I feel like when you see like Christian Bale, who like all he does is like get obese and get anorexic, like that's his character for everything he's in since Little Women. Like truly, has he ever not gained weight for a role? But that must be just like, he must be one of those people who doesn't care about food.
Man, Because
do you get so big and then get so skinny? Like he looked... deathly ill at the Golden Globes.
And even at the Machinist. Remember Machinist where
he got really anorexic for that.
It was like an apple a day or something like that.
But like I don't know that you could be someone who loves food and be that kind of an actor regularly.
Correct.
Like maybe you could do it here and there. Yeah, but I'm like, this guy clearly is not eating right. Like,
Trace. Like, dude, I mean, we could talk about it like we're not recording this podcast. I mean, like, even you as my friend had to be supportive at times to be like, all right, Josh, I know you're not eating tonight.
Like, I had to get salad with you once and I wanted to die. You're like, meet me at the salad place. No, we've gotten salad twice since you've been in LA.
It's definitely a team effort. And
I hate salad.
You know, the book we were reading it's kind of like resonated a lot in the sense that art reflects life, and he talks about it in Fatherhood.
We're talking about Rap Dad, which we're doing next week.
We'll do next week.
In case you didn't know.
And, you know, art is always reflecting our life, so we have to live our life, right? And that's sometimes as with characters, you want to go into this cocoon and you want to like just go into this black hole. And I'm realizing that one, that's impossible as a dad. You can't go into your black hole.
Right.
But two, for me, I don't enjoy that as much. I like still seeing my friends and I like still finding a way to kind of balance everything out. And so I think that's what I'm learning, man. With each new job, you know, there are days where we're all trying to find balance, right?
Like
That's where we're. So with each new job, you try to find that thing. And so there's some tough days in the middle, but I always laugh though after, because then they go, all right, champagne problems, Josh. You know, you can't be that mad about this.
Well, right. These
know?
Are like glamorous problems. But I think people can obviously relate to like weight loss and like trying to figure out the balance between I want to be happy and I want to be healthy, but I also maybe want to look a certain way or feel a certain way or, you know, changing what you're eating because you're you have health issues or whatever. Like it's more common. Obviously yours is like a little bit of a
it's completely superficial because it's for the character, but it's essential. You know, but as we're rapping about it, it makes me think about something else in the business. You know, I think a lot about my family. I think about you, Trace. I think about my friends. Like, you know, you dream about getting to play cool characters and you dream about getting to be on cool shows along the way, you know, and now that I'm getting to kind of taste a little bit here and getting to play interesting little characters and, you know, like you said, a little bit of notoriety is coming my way for these parts. I think about Gus, you know, that's my son. I think about what his life is going to look like in 20 years. You know, he doesn't know what he likes. He doesn't know that dad as an actor yet, you know, but I'm just, once again, in process with this guy, you know, with Gus and me and Brace are always in process with him. We're going to protect him as much as we can, but at the same time, dude, it is what it is, you know, like folks are going to sometimes ask Dada for a picture.
Right.
And that's okay, you know, like, and you know, we'll figure it out as it goes.
Yeah, like balancing. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about your being a dad because we're going to spend all next week talking about it. But Josh is a dad, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
So as an actor, we talk about this a lot on the show because we've had a lot of actors on. We talk about reading as an actor, like that it's part of your job. You have to read scripts and sides and things like that. But once you get cast in a role, how much reading are you doing around your character, if any? Like aside from the text work and like rereading the script and going over your lines, how much like are you trying to figure out the world or the person through reading books or articles?
A lot. It's not necessarily picking up a book, although with this character, you gave me two really good books by Mark Ronson, So You've Been Publicly Shamed and The Psychopath Test. You gave me So You've Been Publicly Shamed, which I loved, and I brought it up to 50 people. And then I just finished The Psychopath Test. I have two more books I want to read about that Juan talked about. I believe it was Wild at Heart that he talked about in the book. And then he then later gives his own critique of it.
Yeah.
But that and another one called A Man's Search for Meaning.
Oh, yeah. By Viktor Frankl?
Yeah.
I have that. Do you need to borrow my copy?
I have it. I'm about to start it. But I only say those books, Psychopath Test and So You've Been Publicly Shamed, I've read. I finished before I started the job. And then these two, I have them with me on set. Just to kind of keep my head in the space that I want to keep it in. But in preparation, I don't know. It's a lot of articles about the time that we're in, you know, who this guy is to me. If he has an accent, I'm listening to that a lot. If it's a time in our world that I don't know very well, I'm trying to just kind of familiarize myself with it. But no, it's much more... I'm realizing now that it's much more audio, I think, or visual that I always try to immerse myself in. And if I find a book that helps with that character, definitely delve into it, like with this one. But this is probably the most I've read out of books for a character, just because I loved those that you gave me so much. It helped so much with who I think the character is.
I have been called an enabler recently by a lot of people because I'm pushing books on them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, I think it's awesome.
But
man,
people are like, you're an innate. I mean, people who have problems like me who read a lot of books, like a lot of people who listen to the show, will be like, I bought this book because you're an enabler. Like, I'm not supposed to be buying more books. I'm like, sorry,
that's
you have
so
too
funny.
Many books. Tough life.
Well, I have, maybe 5 years ago, I would have said, I don't like reading. And I think I even said that to you not too long ago, but it's such a lie because I do love reading. Yeah. Like, there's no better feeling than when you finish a book.
If it's a good book.
If it's a good book.
Well, also, if it's a bad book, you're like, oh, I'm done.
Yeah, I know. That's so true. It's true. So it's like, I just, you are. You're the best kind of a name.
I'm the book pusher.
Hell yeah, man. Like, you've already taught me so much. Just the books you gave me in my lifetime, man, you've taught me a lot. And you didn't know that, but it was through their words, you know, and that's why I think you're the smartest, for real. And I'm not even being nice to you because we're on microphones.
No, but it helps that I paid you a lot of money. It helps that I helped you get through college. It's fine. Okay. I do have one more question about reading as an actor, and then we'll go on to the books. So I know that actors read a ton of scripts for auditions and blah, blah, blah. But here's my question. Have you ever read any scripts where you've been like, this is garbage, and then you've seen it as a TV show or a movie and been like, this was the greatest movie I've ever seen, or vice versa, where you've read a script and been like, oh, this script is so amazing, and like you pictured it and then you saw it produced and you were like, this is terrible.
The answer is yes and yes. Like, like, there was one I read this year that was about, and I'm not going to go too much into it because they might sue me. There was one I read, no, last year. It was a pilot audition, and it was about a town where some weird stuff is going on, and then some kids get captured, and then they have to go to this other town that has a theme that I think is like a holiday theme or something like that. And I'm reading it going like, what is this? And then I realized, I'm like, oh yeah, when folks read Stranger Things, they probably were like, what is this thing? And then we saw it, you know? So that's always my, I don't want to say fear, but you're always trying to figure out like, where do you fit into this story? Can I tell this story? And I've started to stop thinking, is it good? Because what's good now is so, the word I'm trying to think of, what's good now is so subjective,
right?
You know, like there's so many outlets now. And then there are some that, man, I was dying to be a part of, just dying. And then when you see it, the ones that pop into my head are the ones I'm dying to be a part of that I'm not going to be a part of. I'm so excited for Umbrella Academy, the show coming out on Netflix. It's about a superhero family. That looks incredible, you know. And I remember back in the day, like, reading an audition for This Is Us.
Really?
Uh-huh. And then you see it and you're like, oh, this is a beast, you know, like... I'm a parenthood guy, you know?
So when you read This Is Us, did you think it was good?
That's exactly, well, I knew what they were going for, right. And that was it. Like, I have to battle with is it good or is it bad? Because when I'm reading scripts, I can't form that opinion.
Right.
I have to just kind of look at it without a lens, you know? And true, like, what makes me think a script is good is if the dialogue is written well.
Right.
You know, like,
but
if I can hear, that's exactly it. So that's like, I thought stuff was good just because it was me talking for 55 pages.
You're like, I want to be in this scene. Exactly. You're like, I want to do a scene about meeting my birth mom. This is the greatest play ever, greatest movie ever. And it's exactly. Literally a garbage thing.
Like, you know, like, and then the, oh, yeah, dude. Like, you come across so many that... You think it'd be good that you're spot on, man, are terrible. And you think some are terrible and then they end up being
so good.
Best thing ever made, you know? Just never know.
Yeah, well, I always laugh because I have friends, you know, who book pilots and they come and they shoot it and it doesn't get picked up, or it does get picked up and they're not in it. And I'm like, thank God, this show is garbage. I'm so glad I don't have to watch this.
I know.
Like, oh, thank you.
I know. I read this on The Ringer. They had an article this morning where John Krasinski was talking about, he had a conversation with Paul Thomas Anderson.
Okay.
And John Krasinski had said, oh man, I saw this movie and it was bad. Mm-hmm. And Paul Thomas Anderson said, he's like, hey man, you know, you can't say that movie is bad because that's going to limit the stuff we get to make.
Oh.
And I thought that was super interesting.
I think that's dumb.
I know, but I was interested to ask you about that because that we're in a world where you're allowed to be critical, but I'm of the belief that Paul Thomas Anderson said to John, and because I've even heard other people say where it's like, man, I've been in some jobs where you thought they were going to be amazing at the end, and then it comes out and people hate it. And I've had some that, you know, so I guess I'm just learning that I was I can't judge it.
No,
I can't judge any of that. Because, I know.
I think this is totally wrong. I think this is so wrong. This is, ugh, I hate this. Do you want to know why this is wrong? I'll tell you
tell
why
me,
this is
tell
wrong.
Tell me why. Tell me why.
It's wrong because John Krasinski isn't saying in his space as a producer, this is bad and it shouldn't be made. He's saying he saw this movie and he consumed this thing and it wasn't good. He's also not saying it's objectively bad. Mm. He's saying it's bad. Like, that's fine. We talk, like, the next thing I'm about to ask you is two books you love and one book you hate.
Yeah.
Are you, Josh Segarra, the authority on this bad book?
No,
you just didn't like it. And you could have not liked it because it was something that triggered you, or you could have not liked it because you thought it was a little racist, or you could have not liked it because you thought the writing was really bad. But that doesn't mean that the book is actually bad. It means that you didn't like it. So I think that telling people they can't critique things makes everyone make mediocre white guy shit. And also, it's interesting that it's two white guys talking about it. Like, what was the movie was probably like something dumb anyways.
I know, I wish I knew what the movie was.
You know, because it's like, there are things that are bad for reasons that are objectively bad. Like, they glorify rape, right? Mm. And like, if you can't say that that's bad because it's going to limit things like that being made, that's dumb too.
Yeah.
So like, John Krasinski can say it's bad. Whether or not anybody listens to John Krasinski is also a whole nother question. Because honestly, like, I love The Office, but like, I don't know. I'm not going to John Krasinski. He's not like the Academy. Like, I don't... Like,
well,
I don't know. And also, like, think about movies that are really enjoyable that are really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those things are different. And, like, movies that do well are objectively bad. Like, I mean, like, the Tyler Perry movies are like White Chicks. Or, like, I don't know. There's so many, like, Hangover 3. Like, that's an objectively bad movie that did well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's so many different measures for success. I think that we should be able to be as critical of things as we want to be, but also understand that our criticism, like, you have to have a reason for not liking something. And then also, like, you're also not the end all be all of these things. That's just my opinion.
No, wait. That's what I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah.
So, I knew you had a good opinion.
Of course I have an opinion about
this. I have to tell
this.
Everybody, though, about our relationship. I want you to know this.
Oh, God.
There are times in my life where I'll be like, Trace, that wall right there is just too big. And you, Trace, see, some people call it an enabler. You're a fighter, man. You are my, you're inspiration to me at times. Like, even just hearing you talk about that, I want to run through a wall right now, you know? Like,
and
so,
go call every movie bad.
No.
I do. I think everything's bad. I'm objectively a hater. Like, if you want a 5-star review for your book from me, it's got to be outstanding.
Yeah,
like
after
I read
shows,
90 books last year, and I think I gave 16 5-stars. Like, you've got to be great.
But why I love you, though, is because you'll come to my stuff and you say, Josh, you were fantastic.
Yeah. And that guy you had to act with had food in his teeth. And you know what? The music was bad. That's right. I'll tell you. But also, I understand that other people could like it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just a critic at heart. Okay, yeah. So since I already teased it, two books you love, one book you hate.
Two books I love.
Book you don't like that much, but you hope still gets more produced.
No, I'm with you. I got a good one for that one.
Okay.
I love The Lamb, Gospel According to Biff. Biff is Jesus's childhood best friend, written by Christopher Moore. That was, I think, one of the first books I ever read by choice, you know, in high school. And I grew up very religious. I grew up in a Pentecostal church, and I remember somebody talking about it, and just it was like it opened my eyes to what the rest of the world kind of looked like sometimes, you know, like what. So, and made me laugh while doing it. And then what's another one that I love?
Wait, I have to interrupt a little bit. So people, you guys don't know this, but Josh and I know this. One of Josh's best friends is Ross Ezadorian, who was on the podcast a while ago.
Yeah,
he wrote that book, Broken Banana.
Yeah.
And he and I did The Power of Habit together for the book club. But you know that Ross said.
That was his. Yeah. After I listened to that podcast, I was like, you guys named 9 out of 10 books I've ever read in my entire life.
Well, I don't think he said it was his favorite, one of his two books he loves, one books he hates, but he did say it. And I was like, this is such a Josh Ross book. Like, of course. Anyways, continue.
And then the other one, Sick in the Head, Judd Apatow's book.
Oh, I don't know that.
It's a collection of interviews that he started interviewing people for his radio show in high school.
Okay.
So the first interview is like 80 something with Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh,
and he's
a casual
just,
interview.
Yeah, seriously. Just I think I don't want to quote him, but I remember him just kind of seeking out like, oh, I'm going to do this little radio interview, and ended up being an incredible start to his journey.
Wow.
And his book. And just everybody from Chris Rock to Amy Schumer to, I mean, comedy legends, you know, all throughout it. And that's just, that was a good one to read just because, you know, I could read 10 pages and finish an interview and then put it down and pick it up on the next break and learn from some genius folk. And then a book I hate, there's a couple and I put them in the same category. The 48 Laws of Power, mm-hmm. The Art of Seduction, those books that became big while we were in college, you remember mm-hmm, those? Mm-hmm. Even The Game. Mm-hmm. And we read all of them.
Loved it. You loved made me it. Read the game.
Made you read it because it was fascinating
and
to
sexist.
Me. And sexist, misogynistic. Think about how archaic that it is now.
It was such garbage. Garbage.
It was all about like being mean, the negs.
Also,
and,
my
like,
brother wants to come on and do the book. I think he was like, oh yeah, come on and do the game. I was
Brittany,
like,
please do the game.
This is a highbrow podcast. We're very fancy.
Did you interview Mystery the week
Could
after?
Could you imagine me interviewing my actual blood brother about picking up girls? Like, we're too old also. Anyways. But yeah, all those books.
All those, man, because sure, you know, there are nuggets of knowledge in there, things that could help us, but you know it, why I'm saying it, man. Right. Like those things in the wrong people's hands. Mm-hmm. I've heard so much bad behavior justified by those books, you know, and so those things are always tough, man. Those self-help books,
right?
There's so much positive that comes with them. I don't even classify those as self-help. I'm sorry, but there's so much self-help out there that so much beautiful that comes with it, but you know it.
Yeah.
It can cause a lot of pain.
Some of it's trash.
You can
hear our conversation 2 or 3 weeks ago on the four agreements.
Oh, yeah, the four agreements.
It's just, they can be problematic, I think is the word that people
exactly
use.
That's exactly problematic. Thank you. It is the perfect word, you know. I love the four agreements. And yeah, there are things that are very problematic in
the
that
agreements
book
are great, but the author is a human being. Like, he's not like this divine creature who's a genius. Mm-hmm. The agreements are great. Like, mm-hmm. if you take them at face value and you try to apply them, you know, from a place of like love and respect, sure. But some of it is like dumb. What are you reading right now?
Right now, I just finished Rap Dad. So I'm about to start A Man's Search for Meaning.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
And what's the last really great book you read?
Can I say Rap Dad?
Yeah, you loved Rap Dad.
I loved Rap Dad.
I'm excited to talk about it because I had different feelings about it. Yeah. So we'll get into it
Absolutely.
Next week for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
But I know why you liked it.
I loved it.
I'm sure you know why I didn't love parts of it. How do you pick a book? Like, do you read reviews? Do you just like see something online? Do you just call me?
Yeah, it's definitely you. You've given me my last few. And like I said, they've been incredible. But it depends on the work I'm doing. Mm-hmm. That's really, I don't turn to reading for pleasure.
Right.
I do other things, you know. But like I said, there's no feeling like learning from a book, especially something like Rap Dad, where I'm learning from his experience that he's going through and, mm-hmm. and has gone through. But it usually depends on if it's going to add to whatever job I'm currently working on, you know. I rarely read fiction. Rarely. The last fiction book I read was The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay.
I never did that.
You never read that book? Michael Chabon, right?
Yeah.
That was the last one I read a few years ago. I pick up a lot of biographies.
Right.
I just like learning from what people have gone through.
It's like a lot of actor biographies or just
more athlete biographies, I'm realizing, you know.
Do you have a favorite athlete biography?
Coach Phil Jackson, 11 Rings.
Oh, so he has a new one.
What's his new one?
It's like, I can't remember the name of it. He's like out in the forest.
Oh, I'll definitely read it because he had the last season, right? The one
Maybe
where he talked about Kobe and Shaq.
Something about like on the hardwood floor or something.
Oh.
Something hardwood or something.
Oh, I'm definitely
like
going to read that.
It's Phil Jackson.
Yeah, 100% I'm going to read that.
I'm looking it up.
The first athlete biography I ever read was Mick Foley, the wrestler, Mankind, Have a Nice Day. That was number one bestseller.
I just found the name of the Phil Jackson.
What was it?
Sacred Hoops.
Oh, I'm definitely going to read
it. It came out. Oh, wait. That's not new.
Was it old?
It just casually came out recently in 1995.
Oh, perfect. Love that.
Brand new book. I did think he had a new book, though.
Well, I mean.
Maybe not. Anyways.
They're incredible. But because you're just learning from these guys that are a world that I'm such a fan of, you know. But at the same time, they're given the lessons that they've been through, you know. Shaq's book, I really liked. I'm trying to think of all the ones that I have lined up. I literally have The Rock, Mankind, Shaq, Kobe, Mamba mentality, and then Phil's.
Oh my God.
Those are the athletes.
Starting five.
Yeah, seriously, starting five. And then I've got like, those guys have all the fun, the ESPN book, and then the book of basketball, Bill Simmons. Those are my sports like books. Cannons.
Okay, if you had one athlete currently active right now, whose book do you want to read when they retire?
I will say that I appreciate LeBron because he's giving us so much content.
It's like, I know your whole story. I know what you ate for breakfast. Like, truly, LeBron, have some, like, a lady doesn't reveal all her secrets. My God.
But I'm loving it. I'm watching The Shop. Yeah. I'm watching More Than Athlete.
But, like, you definitely don't need to read that book.
I know. I was just going to say, I feel like I'm reading his book a little bit.
The book that I would want to read is him and Maverick break up and then Maverick has all the secrets.
Oh my gosh, that's going to be a great book,
my
Trace.
My sports book that I would want, I think I might want Serena.
Oh, that's incredible.
I think Serena, I might want Serena's book if she got like real.
100%.
And then I also think I would be interested in Kevin Durant's book.
Because
I think he's got a lot to say.
A lot to say.
I think that he's been treated unfairly.
Agreed.
In the media. Agreed. And I think that he's also trying to do something with his personality that I'm not wild about. And I want to see him reflect on this time 100%. In his career. But like, I mean, on the part like where I think he's being treated unfairly is I just think like he's a really good guy and he's done a lot with his money for a lot of people. Mm. And because he doesn't have like a machine of Maverick Carter and all his friends, you know, whose job it is to promote him and all of his good deeds and create television shows and content around him. I think that people unfairly compare him to LeBron and say like, well, LeBron started a school. It's like, okay, this isn't really a competition, but also like Kevin Durant gave $1 million to Oklahoma City, a city he's not even from, like when he was playing there because they had a hurricane. And like, I feel like J.J. Watt got so much credit for what he did for Houston, which was great. But like Kevin Durant gave $1 million of his own dollars, just like, here is a check.
I love KD.
I love him. I think he's like a good guy.
Did you see that documentary that he did? It was like the summer. It was like, it was on HBO or Showtime.
No.
It was the off season after I think he got injured in OKC. So he was coming back. And I didn't know much about KD until that documentary. Right. Fell in love with him.
Really?
Bought his shoes that night.
Yeah.
It was it. And I'm with you. I love KD.
I like him. I just think it would be a good book. I would be like, it would have to be when he's like 60 or 70, when he can like reflect on this like weird, like fake villain thing that he's doing, where he's like kind of being mean, but also like, starting like paying for kids to go to college and like building basketball courts.
Are you
in Oakland.
Still gonna feel the same way when he leaves the Warriors next year?
Well, I liked him in Oklahoma City.
Truth.
So I've liked him.
Truth.
Previously.
I wonder what he's gonna do.
We'll see. Well, maybe him and LeBron can be Lakers together, and then they can write a book together. which I then actively will not read. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're gonna talk about books again. I know. What's a book that you like to recommend to people?
I mean, I love to recommend Lamb. I love to recommend that book because not a lot of people know The Gospel According to Biff.
And,
but I don't recommend too many books to folks. I was just trying to think. But right now, I'm recommending to everybody So You've Been Publicly Shamed by Mark Ronson.
Yeah.
Just because I think it's very pertinent in the times that we live in.
Right.
You know, and I think it's a pretty good read, man.
Yeah.
A really good read. Taught me a lot.
Well, do you set reading goals for yourself at all or no? Because you kind of just read when you read.
Yeah, I don't have reading goals because my goals end up being each script, you know,
right.
I like reading my scripts before I audition. So I read the whole thing.
Right.
And that's a goal. It's like I don't walk into auditions without knowing what I'm doing, you know.
Right.
And then if I'm reading something for a character, the goal is like get to something influential by the time you need it, you know, but it's never a distance thing. You know, I've had books on me for years that literally my friends are like, dog, you've been carrying that book with you since 2005. Why are you not finishing it? I'm like, I know. And I was kind of like that with the Sick in the Head, Judd Apatow's book, because it's, like I said, it was all interviews. So I was carrying around that with me for years until I finally finished it, you know, but it ends up being more of, I end up looking at books as more research, you know? I don't escape into books. I don't have that type. I think I'm too ADD for that, or that's another excuse. But I do jump into research that way.
Yeah. I think also, like, reading, like, everything else is like a practice, mm-hmm. and you have to get disciplined mm-hmm. with it, and like you have to really make time mm-hmm. for it.
You have to prioritize it.
Right, because like I used to read a ton in New York, and then I didn't read it all when I got here, and then I started making it a priority, and now here we are talking about books on a podcast that allegedly people I don't know listen to.
That's awesome.
Hi, Mom. And I'm sure Damaris will listen. Hi, Damaris.
Hi, Damaris.
That's Josh's mom. She's amazing. Okay. Do you have favorite authors that you've either read and returned to their work, or just like authors mm-hmm. that you've really resonate with you?
Juno Diaz.
Okay.
I read This Is How You Lose Her. That's a lie. I was about to tell you a complete lie mm-hmm. on the pod.
And I knew it was a lie.
Duh. You knew it was a lie. Uh-huh. You could tell in my eyes.
Well, because I know when you
when I'm
that.
Lying.
Yeah.
The first Juno Diaz book I read was Drown. And that was a gift from my friend Jenny Barber while okay. I was doing Electric Company. And she just gave it to me. She's like, yeah, I think you'll love this author. And I loved him. And it introduced me to This Is How You Lose Her. And it just...
also read The Life, The One Brief and Wondrous
yeah,
Life.
Yeah, Brief, exactly.
Because you recommended that to me.
Exactly.
And I didn't like it.
And that was the third one I read out of his. His yeah. most famous one I read last.
I didn't like that one.
Yeah, I love... That's okay. That's why we're friends.
Yes, of course.
But no, he introduced me to a world in books that I didn't know existed, and all right. that was just a little Latin kid, you know,
right.
and the things like that resonated with me were just when you start to see yourself and stuff.
Right.
So he did that for me, and I would always go back to him.
And we recognize on this show that also he can also be a garbage person. And both things can be true. Like he could write good things and he could be someone that inspired you yeah. and also he could be garbage and you don't have to defend either thing. I just want to say that.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I like problematic people too. Yes. I actually, you know, I was yes. in Flywheel today and I played Michael Jackson, and I know there's like a new Michael Jackson thing coming out mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, this is going to have to be over for me soon.
Yeah. Blessings to each on their journey.
Yes,
my friend.
Exactly.
Blessings to each on their journey.
Exactly.
And I love Malcolm Gladwell. And I know you love Malcolm.
Love Malcolm Gladwell.
I'm super into revisionist history.
So good. His podcast is so good.
I geek out. I'm like, feel like I'm like in third grade.
Yeah.
Like, what's Malcolm going to teach me today about commas and punctuation?
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
And I love
so
that
good.
Guy. And what was the first one I read of his? Tipping Point, I think it was the first.
That's the last one I read.
Oh,
I've been telling everybody for years, I've read all the Malcolm Gladwell. I love Malcolm Gladwell. I'm such a big fan. I love him. And then I was like, let me look at Tipping Point. And I was like, I've never read this book.
Yeah, dude, absolutely.
So I listened to it like in November.
Yeah.
So I finally
so
completed
good.
It. But I was like, oh yeah, I knew everything Malcolm Gladwell's ever written.
And like, how much did you learn from that guy?
I learned a lot. He's so smart. I loved Blink. And
I loved Blink. What the Dog Saw.
No, my other one I really liked was David and Goliath.
Oh,
David
I've
and Goliath
read
was my
part
favorite.
Of David and Goliath.
Yeah, I think that was probably that and Blink were probably my two favorites.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I didn't love Tipping Point is because the whole time I was listening, I was like, I'm supposed to already know this.
Yeah, I, know.
I was like mad that I had lied to everybody.
Malcolm is like I'm calling him Malcolm like I know him. I love reading his observations mm-hmm. while I'm working because he, like you, Trace. always offers that other insight into something.
It's the greatest compliment you've ever given me.
Well, you know that, dog.
It's true. You see things in a different way.
And when you're caught up in your own shit, when you think you're the best thing since sliced bread, it's real nice to read up on this guy and to hear like, hey, man, the thing that you think started in 2019 started back in 1974.
Right.
And it started, like, I just love that because...
Totally.
No, it's I compared to like Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, like where I like those guys that remind us that like we're just like a little speck of dust in the middle of this whole thing because when you remember that, you realize that like, one, I just want to be the best dad ever. Two, you want to be a great friend to your friends.
Right.
You want your art to reflect your life.
Right.
Is that so the whole, that's what this is about. There's no point in anything else, you know?
Right. And also like, there's also this idea I think that I get from Malcolm Gladwell, which is even if you think that what you're doing is the right thing and you're living in the moment and you're behaving the way that you think goodness behaves, like there's a very good chance in 30 years people are going to be like, oh my God, you recycled. Like, don't you know recycling actually destroyed the planet or whatever it
is. No, that's a good
But like he's constantly bringing back these ideas that are like, this is like very obvious, but there was a time where everybody thought, or a lot of people thought that like during slavery, they were saving the black people.
Mm.
And then that changed, mm-hmm. right? And like, not that you need Malcolm Gladwell to explain that to you, but that's the kind of thinking that he does where it's like, this is what everybody believed in this moment. Like the episode where he talks about the French fries.
Yes.
At McDonald's. And they were cooked in animal fat. And so they were really flavorful. And so everybody just ate like a small because that's all you needed. And now they changed it to be cooked in like vegetable fat, which is like less saturated fats and it's quote unquote healthier, but everybody's eating super size. Mm-hmm. And he talks about like, sure, you're eating less bad fat, but you're also eating three times as much fried food and like things like that where you're like, you think you're doing the right thing, but really you're not.
Yeah.
Or really you're just not doing what you think you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's not so much. He's not so much morality police.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I also like.
Agreed. Like he allows, and do you think he means to do this for us? Like he allows me the opportunity to kind of forgive myself for a lot of things.
Interesting.
You know, like, cause he takes that pressure off of you. It's
right.
Like what you were saying, you know, like there's that pressure. Yeah.
But he also, every once in a while, he has an episode of that show where I'm like, I don't agree. Like, yeah. I did not agree with the one about Martin Luther King and...
Which one was that? Tell me.
He had, like, the civil rights one, and it was about the statue with the dog.
Oh, I didn't listen to that one.
Anyways, it was, like, this whole thing about the civil rights, and he did, like, a little section on it, and I thought some of it was, like, really friendly towards people who had behaved really poorly in the 1960s in the American South. But, you know, I had room to just scream at my... podcast, which obviously is how I behave. Do you ever listen to audiobooks or read on like a Kindle?
100%. Listen a little bit of Rap Dad on an audiobook.
Who did you? And he does it.
Yeah, it was on. Yeah, it was awesome. God. And only just because I wanted to hear. So I re-listened to part three through his eyes, just because that's where he was describing all the dads.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to hear the way he talked about it. You know.
Did you use Audible?
I did use Audible.
Do you know that Audible is one of our sponsors
here? Of course
I do. If you are new to Audible.
They gave me my first free book.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You can get your first book free. So go to audibletrial.com/thestacks for your free audiobook download and free 30-day trial. And if you haven't yet, now would be a good time to pick up Rap Dad on Audible because Juan reads it. And we're going to talk about it 1 week from today. Okay. What is the last book that made you laugh?
The Psychopath Test.
Oh, interesting. What's the last book that made you cry?
Rap Dad.
Oh, what's the last book that made you angry?
So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
I have to ask you this. In your ideal reading setup, where are you? What are you eating or drinking?
Absolutely.
Tell us about it. Because I know you're eating or drinking something.
100%. I'm drinking a LaCroix.
Okay.
Or let's be honest, a Coke.
Okay.
I'm sitting somewhere with a lot of sunlight.
Okay.
And I need quiet. I can't read with other stuff going on. Yeah, no music. Just
tie your kid up, put something in his mouth.
You see my face trying to like say this appropriately so that my son doesn't hate me when he's a grown man.
Podcast like, will be like gone by the time he can listen to
them. Yeah, you know, because he's two and change. And so ideally.
He's gone.
You know, can I tell you the truth, though? Yes. We're starting to read a little bit together because we read to him every night before he goes to bed, and he loves reading. So, like, with Rap Dad, I'd read, like, excerpts from it, and then he'd, like, obviously run away after a couple paragraphs.
He's like, okay.
He's like, I need pictures,
much.
Dad. Yeah. Stop crying while you're reading it to me. Okay, I'm right here and present.
Get a life, dude.
Get a life, dude.
What is wrong with you? I'm so embarrassed. We're related. Are you sure?
No.
I hope not. do you have any favorite characters from books that you've ever read or least favorite characters?
No, not really. Like,
you don't read a ton of fiction.
Yeah, exactly. I don't read too much fiction. So, and I think that's why it's because I want to jump in and I'm already acting in the story.
Right.
So I don't have time to like allow myself to just enjoy the story.
You're already like the lead.
I've already cast myself.
You're like, oh, I'm Shaquille O'Neal. How do I feel about this?
I am Phil Jackson.
Yeah. You're like, I really like the Phil Jackson books because I won 11 rings. Surprise. What about a favorite book from your childhood?
I loved the Goosebumps books.
Mm.
Just every Scholastic book fair I used to go, and I used to love picking up a Goosebumps. I feel like that was, I was a scaredy cat as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So reading those, I felt like I was tough, you know, like I could jump into the story. And then of course, cause they had the TV show. But yeah, Goosebumps were a big part of my childhood.
What about a favorite book that was assigned to you in school that you read? Because I know you didn't read most of them.
No, truth. Truth.
I think that's actually true of most kids.
Yeah.
Because I love reading, and I read very few of the books that were assigned to me in school. And like, as a person who likes reading.
100%. I remember reading like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, I hated that.
Yeah. I loved One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
We read that too, and I like that too. I still have my copy from high school.
Yeah,
actually.
And I think it's because now I can't even remember truly if like where the book and the movie meet and
we
don't
read
meet.
And watched in high school.
Oh,
so like we read and then we
watched. Oh, cool.
Because it was for a lit and film class.
So was it pretty spot on?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And
either.
Then they also did the play at my high school the year after I graduated, and I saw that. So I have like a lot of
you have three.
I have like a
productions.
Lot going on.
Yeah, exactly.
But I liked it.
Oh yeah, 100%. I read the Bible a lot as a kid. Have you done one on the Bible yet?
No. I had a Christian person on.
You did?
Yes, that's Alec Penix. He wrote that book about training and being Christian.
Oh, yeah.
And I talked to him about that.
Yeah.
Which was hard for me.
Yeah. I can only imagine.
It's just like I'm not that into Christianity or any religion. So
me and you
have
rapped a bunch about that, you know.
Which we're going to talk about that when we talk about Rap Dad, too.
Yeah, 100%. No, I and it's funny now looking back, like I'll pick up the Bible every once in a while just to read it, just to kind of grab an excerpt and be like,
it's
interesting.
Like
interesting how that's
super compelling literature to me.
No, that's
you
that's,
know,
yeah.
Like I don't generally feel that I've read very many religious texts that I feel are compelling to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like to read them. If the Bible was super interesting and well written, like if the stories were like if there was a version of the Bible that was written like the stories and not like hear ye she begat this, I think that I might actually be into it because I think so, like Godspell's a great musical and it talks about like the parables. Yeah, I'm into that. But
I remember as a Christian youth that you saw, he's like, no, you have to read the new King James version because they modernize it to say a lot of bros.
Got
you
it.
Know, like, yo, it's Jesus like really said, what cool. up, disciples, you know?
Yeah, so maybe I would like that version, but I don't feel... I will say this. I went to Catholic school. I had to read a lot of the Old Testament and our Hebrew scriptures class.
Oh, yeah.
But then in Christian scriptures, I had completely moved past my interest in reading anything else from the Bible.
Yeah.
I just didn't really care. If you were a teacher, let's say in high school, what's a book you might assign to your students?
Oh, The Places You Will Go by Dr. Seuss.
Whoa, really challenging reading for high school students.
But I thought about this.
Don't hurt them.
I thought about this. This way, everyone will definitely read it.
Definitely read it.
If you did not read the Dr. Seuss, All the Places You'll Go, you have much bigger issues at hand.
That's true.
No, man, I still read that book. I read it to Gus a lot. I cry when I read it sometimes. It was a gift from my friend Babs for his birthday. And I think there's a lot of insight in that book, man. I think that like sometimes we complicate things as adults.
Sure.
And like that whole book is about going to scary places and coming out the other side.
You know? It's a great book. I think everybody gives it to you when you graduate high school.
Yeah, is that what it was?
I got that for high school.
Exactly.
But it's a good book. And Dr. Seuss is great. What about a book that you read where you didn't feel like you were represented at all? Like it didn't have anything to do with you that you still liked or like enjoyed or found interesting?
I mean, I'd like to think The Psychopath Test, but I think I'm kind of a psychopath.
You are, for sure, 100%. So
maybe I resonated more than I thought.
That's definitely correct.
I'm just sitting there like staring at the book going, this has nothing to do with me.
You're like, who could possibly be charming and really trying to kill you later? Not me. What kind of crazy person would do that? What about a book? Oh, I know. This is it. Who's going to write the story of Josh Segarra's life?
Oh, my son.
No. He'll crush you.
I hope he doesn't. I hope he doesn't.
Lisa Brennan Jobs just wrote a book about her life and she crushes her dad.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. Who knows?
No, that's the truth, though. Like, when we rap more about Rap Dad, this book taught me a lot, man. And it kind of put into words a lot of what I've been thinking and a lot of what I've been feeling. And it helped to know that other dads go through that too.
Right.
You know? No, who do I want to write the book of my life? My family, you know?
I'll write it.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I could have you write it, hopefully.
Yeah, I got you. I'm a terrible writer.
Ross would hopefully write it, you know? But, oh man, in truth, it's all about that little guy.
Cute. What about a favorite, as an actor, plays or playwrights?
Oh, most influential, like, when I first got into when I first learned what this thing was, acting in high school, it was Neil Simon. A lot of his plays, you know, we would do Left on the 23rd Floor. We did a scene from, or, you know, Odd Couple was the first play I ever did.
Oh, wow.
I played Murray the cop. And then got into college, and I love Martin McDonagh. The Pillow Man.
Pillow Man.
Yeah, you know.
So good.
Yeah, love that. Love that thing.
Fuck, that show's
Shout
so
out
good.
To those boys that I did that with. I love Take Me Out, Richard Greenberg. I went with my dad to see it. He took me to see it on a trip to New York, and
that's like gay baseball.
Yeah. About the baseball team. Yeah. And it was the first time that it was one of the first times where I saw like, oh wait, these guys are athletes, but they're telling this very, very necessary story. Right. And it's a play on Broadway, and these guys are like doing, they seem like they're having fun. So I loved that. But yeah, I got to say Neil Simon first. He was the first guy where I knew what a playwright was.
Right. Are there any favorite like books that have been turned into films or TV, since you love film and TV? It's also kind of hard because I think sometimes I fall in love with a movie and then I'm like, oh, that was a book?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I feel like if I answer anything, I'm just going to say something wrong that was never a book was a book and I didn't know.
Last night we just watched, because I just finished reading Romeo and Juliet again.
And
we watched the Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, of course.
It is so good. I don't care. It's amazing.
No, it's incredible.
It's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Claire Danes is so good.
So good, man.
Leonardo DiCaprio is good. She is so good.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy who plays Mercutio, insane.
Yeah. Who was
it? Insane. He was in Oz, and he was also in Zero Dark Thirty, the black guy. I don't know his name.
Oh.
I don't know. He's like a British actor, I think. Yeah. I'll put it in the show notes. I can't remember his name, but he's so fucking good.
And, you know, Leguizamo's in that.
Leguizamo and Leonardo DiCaprio are good.
Yeah.
These other two are like outstanding. I'm sorry. Claire Danes is so incredible in it. And then at the end, she lets out her full Claire Danes ugly cry, like hope, like the precursor to Homeland crying.
Of course.
Like, I did it last night along with the movie, and my husband was like, you're spoiling it. I was like, I'm sorry that I cried too soon.
You made me think, though, about Johnny Legs. And we talked about biographies before. His book, Pimps, Hoes, Playa Haters, and All the Rest of My Hollywood Friends. That was a big one. I read that right at the beginning of college.
Yeah.
And I think that was very influential. And it makes me think about his plays, Freak, you know, Spickorama. I could keep going. But those, getting to see him on stage, just saw him in Latin history. I used to watch a DVD of Freak. And that was, to me, I would try to do impressions of him, and he would do accents and Dominican accents, Puerto Rican accents about his mom or his dad, and that was super influential.
And you got to be in a movie with John Leguizamo.
I did.
I remember that was a big deal.
Yeah, The Ministers. Yeah, I shot that. A summer in college, winter break over college. Yeah,
that's so cool. Okay, last one.
Yeah,
my favorite one, I stole from the New York Times.
Can't wait.
What's one book that you would recommend to the current president of this United States of America?
I've been thinking about that.
This question, everybody always thinks that I like it because of who the current president is.
Right.
But they actually were doing this when Obama was president.
Yeah, exactly.
And the answers are always really different. But
man, Mr. President. I would love it if Mr. President, you know, if I might just send him all the places you'll go.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
But I feel like that could be interpreted however which way we choose.
Yeah, he might think that that's an endorsement.
You know?
Right.
The Four Agreements is a pretty good one.
Sure.
You know? I'd be interested to rap about the Four Agreements with Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
I think that'd be pretty fun.
No, I'm inclined to want to give him a book written by a woman, just on the point that like women are actually humans.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
I don't know. I feel like that it's a hard question, but I always like to hear what people say because some people like really struggle with it and some people like they know right away. Sometimes it's a children's book and sometimes they're like, I'm not playing down to him. Like he needs to read a fucking adult book. You're the president.
It's true.
So
it's true. You're going to have to edit out my 3.5 minute pause that I had in
Josh
there.
Josh was thinking.
I was thinking for a long time.
It's good. Thinking is important. Something else he could probably afford to do. Maybe think before you speak. Okay. Well, we're all set for today. Josh will be back next week. We're going to talk about Rap Dad by Juan Vidal. And if you haven't listened to it yet, go back to our Short Stacks number 4, which is my conversation with Juan, which came out Monday, January 14th, I think. I don't know. It's long gone. Who knows? Anyways, check it out. And Josh, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Trace.
And we will see you all in the stacks. All right. Thank you all so much for listening today. And thank you to Josh Segura for joining us. Remember to check out his new show, The Other Two, on Comedy Central starting Thursday, January 24th. Next week, we're reading Rap Dad by Juan Vidal for the Stacks Book Club. For more from the Stacks, follow us on social media using the links in our show notes and see our articles and reviews on the website, thestackspodcast.com. To join the Stacks Pack and to get inside access to this show, like perks and the book club and more, go to patreon.com/thestacks to join the fun. Thank you to our sponsor, My Mentor Book Club. For 50% off your first box of two nonfiction hardcover books, go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. And thank you to Audible. To get your free 30-day trial and free audiobook download, go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tegeerages. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. And I will see you in the stacks.